Blog Talk Radio.
What if you were wearing something sexy? What if you were drinking? What if you made the first move? No matter what, sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, reminding you it's never your fault.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Good evening, good evening. Welcome to a special edition of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I know it's not Saturday, but look, I got a really hot, cool guest, and I was like, he needs to come on. So we're doing it Wednesday night, and I want to let you know you can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, lots of cool pictures. That's Saturdays with Joy Keys there. Also now, I don't know if you guys know, you can hear the show Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and as well as here on Blog Talk Radio. So if you're listening to music, you get bored, you want to slide over to the podcast, think about us. And also, please review. You can, you know, leave a couple stars or whatever. Please do that at the end if you really like the show or you have some other comments. It's really appreciated. So tonight, wow, I got a really hot, I've been getting a lot of comments, okay, from his pictures. Of course I put the hot pictures up. I didn't put his homely pictures up, okay? This is Vaughn Hebron. He's playing on the Oval, and they're coming back on October 2020. And he's here right now. Good evening.
Hello. How you doing, Joy?
I'm all right. How are you? Should I say, root, root, cute dog in the house?
Oh, yeah. Shout out to the Braz, root, root, root. I'm doing well. Happy to be here. Happy to be able to talk to you. And, excited to get into it.
So we were talking earlier about this COVID situation and how you were able to work. Tell the audience a little bit about what you guys had to go through to finish filming some of the scenes and stuff.
Yeah, so basically when COVID hit, I think it hit the industry the hardest starting in March. So I had just finished King Richard with Will Smith. I was in L.A. shooting that. I finished that the weekend before I went back down to Atlanta to shoot the second season of The Oval. And I was down there for 5 days. It was a Friday before we was about to start shooting that next Monday. And the executive producers calls us in and they say, look, this COVID thing, we're not going to mess with it. We're not going to take any chances. So give us 2 weeks to figure out, you know, how we can still film and deal with the COVID thing. So
right.
When I first heard it, I thought they were playing. I didn't know they were serious. I was like, we really not about to shoot this? Like, everybody's down here now. We're going to take a break. So lo and behold, two weeks turned into basically 6 months. 6 months. So after that 2 weeks, obviously, everything went dark. The city of Atlanta went down. L.A. went down. I feel like everywhere went down. So I flew back to L.A., was talking to my manager and agent a lot and just seeing if there was anything that was shooting, if we were still auditioning. And they said, nah, everything is shut down. So COVID literally shut Hollywood down from March until probably, when Tyler shot Sisters, that was the first production I think that I know of that went back into production. And that was the beginning of the middle of July, I believe. So, everything
crazy,
was shut down for
right?
a long time, man. And yeah, we were just figuring out, you know, obviously there was things that we could do in the back end as far as trying to, again, set up meetings, set up auditions, and book anything that when we were given the green light again that we can actually go and do. But it was such a questionable and uncertain time that you didn't, even if you did book something, you didn't know when you were going to actually be shooting it. So it was just the life the past 6 months has just been a big question mark for the industry.
Now, how about you and your family and being able to reach, you know, your parents and your siblings? How has that been? Were you doing like Skype stuff? I heard you come from a huge family, like 8 or 9 siblings. So how did that work out with your family?
Mm-hmm. So luckily my family, my father, he was still able to work and do everything that he was able to do, and he was being safe as possible. So luckily he was still able to work. My mother was still able to work. So I'm just happy that my family was still being taken care of financially and being as safe as possible. They live in Georgia themselves, so obviously I was talking to them all the time and then just getting regular checkups with them. Most of my siblings are in college, so their classes shut down, and they were trying to deal with, I think they had like an early midlife crisis because they was just like, I'm about to graduate, I don't know what I'm going to do. Yada, yada, yada. I was trying to go into the job market. Now that's closed down. So it was just a very time, and everybody was just trying to figure out their own, what they were going to do in their own path. But luckily, everybody was still staged, still able to work. So we were, you know, God really blessed us with that compared to, you know, a lot of other families who weren't as fortunate.
Yeah, a lot of people are out of work, and now they're talking about, you know, they're not giving a second, a stimulus package to people. And, you know, the reasons are that, if we give them a second pack, if we give them some more money, they're just going to be lazy and bums. First of all, you only gave people like $600 or $1,200. So, like, really? I mean, I don't know of apartments, you know, I don't know of an apartment, like a 1-bedroom apartment. That's not even rent for a month. So I think I'm going to get my ass back to work. You know what I'm saying?
Right. It was so funny because this past Labor Day weekend, I was looking at everybody like, oh, so y'all must have been working out here for y'all to be out here celebrating Labor Day weekend like y'all been laboring. Because I was like, yo, I'm trying to get back to work as soon as possible. I was trying to get back to work as soon as possible.
So what do you think about now?
I'm sorry. I was saying that I'm happy that a lot of people I know was able to collect unemployment and support themselves, support their families. I mean, some of them got it and just went out and started buying clothes, but the other people that really needed was able to get it too. So I was happy about that.
That's good because, some people did go out and buy clothes and do stupid stuff and thinking, this is going to be over real quick and I'm going to be able to go back to work. And, I have friends and family as well that, you know, they were like, what's going to happen? And they've been finding out that their jobs, they're not going to be going back to their building maybe until next spring.
Until next
spring.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even because in
LA specifically, a lot of businesses opened up for like a hot minute and then they closed back down. So people thought, you know, they were good going back to work, making money again, and then everything shut back down. So it's just been a lot of uncertain times, and I just hope that it gets figured out soon.
Yeah, so other things are going on in the world as well. You know, we have this a lot of protesting about George Floyd and mm-hmm. Breonna Taylor. Fortunately, Breonna Taylor's mother, I just heard that they received $12 million, I think it is. Let me ask you this. You know, if you lose a child, do you think $12 million is enough? Is the money the issue, or would you rather have the people, held accountable for their crimes?
Oh no! The money is basically Louisville saying, "Take your money and just get over this," you know. And it's never going to be enough because that's not what the family was asking for, and that's not what we as Black people are asking for. We're asking for people to be held accountable for their actions and to be held accountable for what's wrong. And so I think that money is just an attempt for them to just shut the family up. I'm happy they got the money, and I'm sure they are too, but that's, at the end of the day, that's not what the issue is about. Like, she was killed, 6 months ago, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
She was killed March 13th. So for her killers not to be brought to justice still, it's just there's no rhyme or reason for it. So the money, it's just a bad attempt for them to just try to get rid of this issue instead of doing the right thing and making sure those guys go to jail or worse.
What do you think about this thing about defund the police? I mean, is that the solution? And when you say defund the police, because people have different interpretations of that. People are like, oh, my God, they're going to completely get rid of the police. My understanding, they don't want to get completely, but the funds that are going toward the police could be used toward possibly more social programs and helping people so that, it makes a better community. What's your opinion about that?
Yeah, I'll say this. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, and as bad as Baltimore is, and as bad as the police is sometimes out there, I'd rather have the police around than not. Mm-hmm. I will say that. So I don't know how far the defunding will go, but I do know that the police, at least from where we're at least coming from. The police are essential because I don't want to think about how bad things would be if the police were not there. I have a few fraternity brothers that are policemen. My uncle, he was a policeman for a while before he got into the SWAT. So I don't think the issue is defunding the police. I think the issue is making sure that the police, like giving more training, having more psychological evaluations and character evaluations of these people that we're calling to serve upon, that are called to serve upon. I think there needs to be way more extensive insight into these actual people that are being called police than actually defunding and taking them away. I know it's a critical resource for a lot of cities, not just Baltimore, but a lot of cities. So I wouldn't say that defunding is a solution, in my opinion.
Now, when you were growing up, you know, as a young black man, okay, you talk about Baltimore. I mean, they got a lot of issues. I have a stepsister lives down there, so I know about Baltimore and the police. Did you have to deal with being stopped and when and how you handled it?
I got stopped way more in college. When I was in Baltimore, I was with my family a lot. And even when I was in the end of middle school and high school, if I wasn't at school or at practice or at work, I was home. I was home. My parents didn't really play that, like hanging out. And yeah, they didn't really play like hanging out at the wrong places, not being around the right crowd. So I was kept a lot from that. In college, when I was, you know, well, at the end of high school and in college, when I was able to move by myself, really, and be out and about doing my own business, I got stopped more often then, but it wasn't taught how to handle police. I was taught how to handle police. My stepfather, he's in the Marines. Well, he was in the Marines. So any officer of the law or any person, any military person, he taught me very much how to talk to him. So I never really had any issues, personal issues with police, but I've had homeboys, obviously, who I've seen how they talk to them, and I've seen, and even when they're with me and we get stopped, you know, I'm up there trying to escalate the situation. They talking to them like they're crazy. So it could still get a little heated, but I never had any personal issues with the police, besides, of course, what they do to me and my people as an extension of me. That's my personal issue.
Right. Yeah. Now, you play a father on the show, The Oval, and you've lost your child. What would you tell your child in this time on how to handle police? Should they be out protesting? How can you help them deal with the fear, maybe as a black child, man or woman, going out in the world and like being concerned, like, am I going to be stopped by the police and not come home? Or if, you know, at that moment, you know, what would you tell your child?
That is a hard conversation. I think that's a hard conversation. I think that is a challenge that African American families definitely have had for a long time now. And I'm not, I'm glad I don't have to have that conversation yet with anybody. Yeah, I don't envy them. I don't envy them for having to have that conversation. It's tricky because at the end of the day, you are a black man, you are a black woman, and you are proud of who you are, you know?
Yeah.
But pick your battles. You know, pick your battles, live to fight another day, make it home. You know, so I wouldn't want my son or daughter, because they have so much pride in who they are, and they have so much I'm going to stand up for what's right, that they end up dying. You know, I'd rather them make it home and be like, all right, we took an L today, but it's all right because you're still alive, you know. I definitely believe in the protest, first and foremost. The protests are essential. That's no doubt about that. The protests are essential. The peaceful protests are essential. Let me be specific. The peaceful protests are essential. But when being stopped by the police, it's you're already in a lose-lose situation, you know? I feel like as a black person, a black man in America, you're already in a lose-lose situation. So pick the route that's going to have you living.
Get you home.
You know,
yeah,
pick
get
L.
you home.
Yeah, pick the one that's going to get you home, not get you in jail, not get you shot. And I understand that you, again, be proud of who you are, stand up for your rights, but at the same time, make it home. Make it back to your loved ones. Make it back to your children. It's a tough conversation.
Yeah, it is. I'm a parent, and also I worked with young men between the ages of 13 and 18. And actually, there was a PDF made by the Black Police Association that people can download from the Black Police Association's website. I think if it's still there, and it talks about things to do when you are stopped. So if anybody's listening and they have, you know, children and they're not sure what to say, that might be able to help them. Let's talk about this call you got from Tyler Perry, though, to be on this show. Like, where were you? What were you doing? Did you, like, not believe it was him? I mean, were you expecting it? Just talk to us about this whole thing here.
Gotcha. When I got the call from Tyler, that was, I think, April of 2019. So I did a show with Blame It On Quay, Quaylen Rogers. And that aired in 2018. And then Quay got picked up to do a play with Tyler, the last tour play. So they were working together for a few months. And then Quay texted me. He said, hey, I think Tyler wants your information. Can I give it to him? I'm like, hell yeah, man. What you got to ask me for?
Of course. What?
Like,
can I give it to him? You don't have to call me about that.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you know, wanted to speak to me about something. But I didn't know when it was going to be. I didn't know if it was going to be a day from now. I didn't know if it was going to be a year from now, you know. I just thought, okay, God's opening doors, planting seeds, yada, yada, yada. So 10 minutes later, I go into my kitchen. I start cooking, and I see a 404 number pop up. And I'm like, this can't be him. Already. I'm like, this cannot be Tyler Perry already. Yeah. This was like 10 minutes ago that he asked for a number. All right, so I answer the phone. And I'm like, because I have a thought that it's him. So I'm like, all right, sure. I'm like, hello, this is Vaughn Hepburn. He said, is this Vaughn?
You did your professional voice, right?
I know, right? Yeah, real respectful. He's like, Tyler Perry here, sir. Nice to meet you. I said, Tyler, how you doing? Like, trying to act surprised, like I didn't know he was going to be calling. But it was so surreal. You know, it was so surreal that he called me personally right after I got a heads up that he might be calling me. And I was actually still cooking while he was calling me because I was still kind of in shock. And he's like, what you doing over there? And I said, I'm cooking, sir. He said, well, people usually stop what they're doing to talk to me when I call them.
Okay.
And I was like, that's a good point. So he called me up personally, and we talked about, you know, he was asking about my background with acting and where I was from, just getting some, you know, information on me. And then he started talking to me about the Oval, which I didn't know it was called the Oval at the time. He just said, I got this project coming up that I think you would be perfect for. I saw your show before, and you had a lot of comedy chops. I was interested, you know, to see if you would be interested in drama as well. And, you know, Tyler, he when he says drama, he means very, very heavy drama.
Right.
Because I didn't know what I was signing up for at the time. But yeah, we had the conversation. You know, he still wanted me to audition for the role. So I went in and did a good job at the audition in front of Ken Coleman. And 3 months later, I was down in Atlanta getting ready to film.
That's such a blessing. Wow. You know how many people struggle. I mean, you're still very young, and people are struggling, you know, for years, 10 years, 15 years before they actually get, you know, I know people in the business, and then it's like finally, boom, after all this time, and people think like, oh, they just got it. No, they've been working in this business for like 10, 15, 20 years, you know? So it's such a blessing that you got this role. It's a great role. How do you practice your lines? How do you learn your lines? What are things, tips and tricks you could give people on learning lines and stuff for a young actor?
Gotcha, yeah. Thing is with Tyler, because we shoot so much in a day, like we'll probably shoot maybe 70 to 80 scenes a day.
Wow.
If you could do a Tyler Perry show, you can do anything else when it comes to learning your lines. Because there are some days where I have 40 pages of dialogue, and some days I have 60 pages of dialogue in one day. So how do I memorize my lines? I just stay up and just crank them out. I think, I mean, obviously I'm a cue, so, you know, I've gotten used to memorizing things pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I'll say about that. But
that's all you say about that, right? From being online, you have to be online. So yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know. So I just crank it out. I mean, there's character work and there's, you know, for crafting these scenes and, you know, trying to come up with these performances that obviously help. But at the end of the day, it's just about using somebody to help you read with. And just literally going over it so much that it just becomes, it's falling off your tongue without you even, especially with Tyler, because we'll go from one scene and 5 minutes later we'll be in a whole nother scene. Literally 5 minutes later we'll be in a whole nother scene. And you just have, it has to be so ingrained in you that you're not even thinking about the words. It's just literally falling out.
Right.
So I think for any actor, you just have to be so familiar with the dialogue and so familiar with the scene that you're not even thinking about it. It's your automatic response is your line.
Yeah, that's a good thing to say. I mean, if you're doing that many, you got 40 pages a day or something. I mean, like you said, if you can do Tyler Perry, you can do anything else. No problem. You know what I mean?
When it comes to the dialogue, when it comes to the amount of dialogue, that's it.
So let me ask you this. You're in really good shape. I mean, from what I see, I'm just looking at pictures and whatnot. I don't really know. But let's talk about your workout. What'd you say?
No, I said yes, ma'am, right. You wouldn't know.
Yes, ma'am, yes. Oh, God, you got to say ma'am. Make me feel so goddamn old. But anyway, I am older
I'm
than
sorry.
You. That's okay. What's your workout? What do you do to stay in shape? Are you running? Are you doing weights? Doing jumping rope? I mean, what's your plan, and how often do you work out?
So I just actually just did a GQ Fitness article on this recently. So my workout really consists of, so I try to work out 7 to 8 times a week. And it's, I don't know, I've been working out since I was probably 5 years old. So it's something that's ingrained with me. I might be a little off because I understand that's a lot. But I work out like 7 to 8 times a week if I can. And it consists of weightlifting and also boxing and kickboxing. And sometimes in there I'll do like a workout where it's a lot of cardio, or I might go outside and, you know, do some sprints or do a lot of high-intensity interval training. But for the most part, I lift all the time, and I'm either kickboxing or boxing all the time too. So I'll do 4 workouts, and then I'll take a day off, and then I'll do another 4 workouts, and then I'll take a day off. And then obviously during the week I diet heavy, so I have like 5 to 6 meals a day that I cook. And I try to stick to that as much as I can. Sometimes I go a little off. But, yeah, it's I'm just very strict with my dieting and my fitness routine.
So you have a cheat day? I mean, what do you eat on your cheat day?
Oh, yeah, my cheat day is on the weekend. And that's when I splurge. Like, I have a huge sweet tooth. I love seafood. Seafood platters, so I'll go always get some seafood or something, or have a nice, I don't eat steak or red meat a lot, but maybe once a month I'll have a steak or I'll have a big burger, or I'll just go get some soul food, or, you know, hopefully a friend or something is cooking. So, yeah, on weekends I splurge, I have a good time, and then on Monday I go back to the diet, you know?
Right, go back to being strict again.
Yes, ma'am.
So now, you said you're a comedian. I was reading about that, you know, you actually, you know, you have this very serious role, you know, this angry guy, but you're comedic. And in what way? I mean, are you doing slapstick, you feel, or are you like one of the, like, when you tell a joke, it takes 5 minutes for us to know what it is? Or
No, I'm sorry if that came off wrong. I'm not a comedian. I did a comedy show. Tyler saw me on a comedy show before. So I'm not a comedian myself. I just did a comedy show before.
Oh, yeah. No, I got that. I was just saying I know that I had read that you have a comedic side. A lot of people, you see this angry guy, but that's not you. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
On the oval. You know?
Like in real life, in real life, I'm very much I'm kind of sarcastic. I'm kind of crude. But it's all in good fun. I just like to have a good time and try to make people open up, loosen up a little bit. I'm always cracking the joke on something. It's very different from Barry, you know. And because Barry has so much drama going on in the show, you really only get to see that side of me as an actor, because I have to do, obviously, Barry justice with everything he has going on. So you don't see a lot of me smiling and playing and all this other stuff. But in real life, yeah, I'm very playful. And I like to smile, I like to laugh, and I like other people around me to be able to do so as well. The other show I did with Quay, it was totally different. I was cracking jokes and laughing and cutting up the whole time. So, you know, if anybody's interested to see the different side, that would be the place to go. Or just watch my Instagram.
So,
I'm always doing something stupid.
Watch your Instagram. Yeah. Let me ask you just some silly questions. Are you a dog person or a cat person?
You know what I mean? Like, I love dogs, and I want to be a dog person so much. But the way I be feeling sometimes, you know, at home, it's like, dang, I wish I had a pet, but I can't take care of a dog because I'll be gone all day. Or if I travel, I'm like, I ain't about to get a babysitter for you. So I'll be wanting a cat sometimes too. But then I'll be like, I'm a manly man. Should I have a cat, you know? Or maybe a cat will make me maybe look balanced. I don't know.
Oh, my God. All right. Peanut butter and jelly versus turkey and cheese. Depends on the day. Okay.
Oh, peanut butter and jelly all day. Peanut butter and jelly all day. Peanut butter and jelly all day.
So what makes a good peanut butter and jelly sandwich, though? Is it the jelly, the peanut butter, or the bread?
First of all, you gotta warm the bread up. I mean, that's first and foremost. You know what I mean? You gotta warm the bread up, and then you gotta have a lot of peanut butter. But the jelly is really what makes it, like, you know, juicy. You know, peanut butter. I'm about to say peanut butter is dry.
Right.
A moisture, you know. If you're gonna eat it, it gotta be a little moisture.
All right, this conversation can go somewhere that we don't want it to go. So thank you so much, Vaughn, for being on the show today. I wish you so much success dealing with this COVID and still trying to get work. But, again, thank you so much, really, for coming on the show. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me, Joy.
All right, you have a good evening. All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, you do the same. Take care of yourself.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with actor Vaughn Hebron. You can check them out in The Oval. They're coming back in October 2020. Also, really not anytime soon, he'll be in the King Richard movie. They got delayed. It'll be out, and he said, almost like a year from now, just because of all this COVID drama. So still keep an eye out. I'm sure that'll be a really good movie, the two of them together. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Also, I'm doing two shows this coming weekend. You want to check out, it'll be musician Billy Childs. He's a jazz pianist. And Ellis Coase, he's a journalist, scholar, talking about free speech. So check that out. That's Saturday between 11 and 12. All right, you guys have a good evening.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.